Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. And I hope you already listened to the previous episode about pain management, but if not, that's okay. That's okay because they're here. We're back at it again. Dr. Charles Short is with us and Dr. Jennifer Johnson are also with us. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yes. So, you know, we teased it out on our previous episode about Animal Pain Awareness Month. So I guess we should have a drum roll, Dr. Short. So tell our listeners when it is and what is it?
Pain Awareness Month for animals is a time when we can really think that this is a serious part of being a veterinarian. It's a serious part of our client relations and, of course, obviously, our relationship with our patients. And now we like to think in terms of whether it's dog, cat, horse, or whatever species of animals, that they're not just animals. They are our patients. And during the Pain Awareness Month, it gives us an opportunity to concentrate on that and to think in terms of how do we actually involve our clients in thinking the same way. It gives us a chance to remind people that there's both acute and chronic pain situations that exist in their animals. And we also have the opportunity to confirm that now we have medications and we have information on how to manage pain and relieve suffering. And that it has advanced to that point where, client, guess what? In addition to how your doctors and your nurses and all manage your pain or your children's pain and different times, we also can follow similar situations for animals.
So, Dr. Johnson, when is Pain Awareness Month?
Well, Pain Awareness Month is September. We chose September because we have always emulated the IASP on the human side, the International Association for the Study of Pain, and their Human Pain Awareness Month is September. So what better time for us to have an Animal Pain Awareness Month than the month of September?
I love that. It makes sense. And there's so much that you can cover, not only just in the month, but for the year, of course. But talk to me, Dr. Johnson, about when we talk about, you know, pain issues as indicated for individual cases. So what does that mean? And what does that mean to the overall hospital team?
Well, I think that sometimes, especially at new graduates or people that just coming into veterinary medicine, we're trying to memorize everything. And we have these protocols, and maybe you work in a corporate practice where there's this big standard operating procedure book where when we have a block cat, we do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I think that it's important to remember that, and we knew this a long time ago. Dr. Short was instrumental in educating veterinary students that pain is very individualized, that we need to take each case on a case-by-case basis. So if you have a dog that has just had an ovarian hysterectomy and is a 6-month-old boxer, you can't assume that it's going to behave like every 6-month-old boxer that has an ovarian hysterectomy. So each one should be assessed and treated individually. And don't be afraid to do that. Don't say, well, I only use 10 milligrams of this or that, or I never do this, because what we need to do is see the pain, treat it, and don't stop. Don't quit until the pain quits.
We also have to recognize that when the veterinarian sees the patient, they have come through the receiving area of the hospital. They frequently have been exposed, quote, to other patients. And in some cases, they become very excitable. In other cases, they are scared. And as a result, by the time you put them on the exam table, they were responses by individual rather than just a standard way of looking at them. And so as a result, if you don't recognize some of the behaviors that are individualized, then you may come to the wrong conclusion about whether or not they are in pain or whether they are just excited.
I sat in on a talk from one of the fetch conferences. Is it pain or is it behavioral? You know, and that's like such a good thing to chat about with your team to understand some of the behaviors that are associated potentially with pain, or is it just the dog or cat themselves? So pretty interesting.
Let me follow up on what you just mentioned. In my lab, at one point, we had something like 18 dogs that were in the cages, we'll call it. And interestingly, the fellows that fed and cleaned and whatever and took care of that aspect of management liked to listen to rock and roll music while they were doing it. And when my associate and I would go to the lab to do our work on studying opioid pain medication and doing cardiovascular and neurologic whatever studies on it, they would be out barking and howling and excited and whatever, indicating, you know, that they were upset. Now, my associates like to listen to soft classical music, and so do I. Once we would get that started, these laboratory dogs would quieten down and relax. Just a contrast between loud noise that upset them. And there are research papers on how that loud noise will cause animals to respond adversely.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, they've done, you know, looking at pain, and this is a lot of research in the human side talking about the biopsychosocial model of pain. So it's not just the physiology and it's not just completely biological, but there's so many aspects. And we like to correlate that to animals too. And I think that the fear-free research that has been done with the idea that fear, anxiety, and stress can cause this vicious cycle in the pain mechanism. So if you're in pain and you're really afraid because you're running from a bear, it might reduce the feeling of pain for a little bit because you have to run through the woods. But then the opposite is also true. If you're very anxious and stressed, think about that cat in the corner of it, that the pain is going to be elevated so much.
And we must not forget that in some cases, the reason the animal is responding adversely is, unfortunately, there is domestic abuse in the home where they live. And as a result, the cat or the dog is responding adversely to it. And that's an unfortunate situation. But, hey, we have to recognize it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And going back to Pain Awareness Month, Dr. Johnson, what are some things that our listeners can do for their practices to promote it?
Well, if you go onto the IVAPM website, we have a whole list of things that are great things to do for Pain Awareness Month. What I think is important is this is a really good time to, because your practice may be great, all of your staff, everybody might be on board with pain recognition and identification, but this is a great month to really make sure that you are advocating for the patient with the client, with the pet owner. So there's lots of tools, handouts, there's downloadable posters and things that you can do to promote mostly the identification of pain in pets at home, because it helps us as veterinary professionals, if clients understand the signs and the potential before they even come into the practice, that's going to be really helpful for us.
What are some things that you would recommend as well, Dr. Short?
Well, one of the aspects of that that I think gets overlooked a lot of times is in the end of life aspects of practice. there are times when it's appropriate that no longer can the animal live with their pain or their disease process. Now, how we discuss that with the client and how, what terminology we use can make a huge difference. I don't teach that we do euthanasia. I don't teach that we put them down or that we just end life. I teach that whenever it gets to that stage, we practice the final stage of pain management. The final stage of pain management is when you give a dosage of anesthetic analgesic medications so that it does end the life of the animal. But it ended life not suffering. It ended life in comfort. And that I have found that since in many instances in academia, I was asked to do that even if I was not the person that had examined the animal. So I would tell them, I'm not just putting your animal down. I'm practicing the final step of pain management. And the comfort that you saw in the eyes and the facial expressions of the clients was amazing.
That's a total profound difference, right?
Right.
Yes. And I think that just that one takeaway is like the, if you change your whole perspective, and you know, this opens up a whole can of worms, but the whole idea of compassion fatigue in veterinary practice, mm-hmm. and how difficult it is, because we know there's a lot of, you know, financial and, but the idea that we're ending life is a burden. You come home and you're, but if you can frame it the way that Dr. Short, if that can help any young graduate be able to practice with more joy, I think that this is a great point.
I think it's one of the most profound things that I've heard in a while, actually, Dr. Short, because, and you're right, Dr. Johnson, it's a mindset. And, you know, when you're doing a 12, 15 hour shift and you're having these end of life care discussions, and you do say that to the client, it's very emotional regardless. But when you hear that, just like you said, you're like, thank you. You know, mm-hmm. thank you. Or, you know, you have a little bit more empathy from the client's perspective of like, wow, thank you for like giving me peace of mind, knowing that they're not going to be in any pain in their final moments.
I have one client while I was active on the floor at Cornell. I have one client that brought their animal all the way from New York City to Ithaca, New York, because of that situation. They could not let someone just give it an overdose of euthanasia. They brought it all away. And when I explained to them that, oh, I'm just going to treat the animal's pain. I'm going to make sure it's not suffering. I'm going to give it a heavy dose of analgesic. Now, it probably won't wake up.
Right.
And of course, it didn't. And I even had a phone call from him from New York City afterwards saying, we are finally comfortable with what we had to do.
Really well said. I want to close with this final question from both of you. You've been in the industry for a long time. Dr. Short, where is the veterinary profession going in terms of pain management? Where do you see it 5, 10, 20 years on the road?
I see it spreading. I am so delighted that over the past 20 years, to see how it's grown, and see how younger veterinarians have bought into the concept. And it is spreading in such a remarkable way. And it is so gratifying. And I'm so thankful that young veterinarians are addressing it and are showing so much compassion for patients, whether they are large animal or small, it's there.
I agree. I think that it's wonderful because with research and with technology, we have better ways to treat pain in humans and in animals. And you're going to see that expound because that everybody sees the remarkable strides and things like, you know, monoclonal antibodies and things like that. But I also think that stepping back, the future is that it's going to be the number one priority in our patients, and that it's going to be at the forefront, and it'll continue to be recognized as critical for success in medicine.
Well, people are so aware of pain in their families and colleagues that they now are recognizing that their pets or their horses or whatever, that they have similar responses to similar circumstances. So the public, animal-owning public, are wanting their animals to not suffer and to have relief of pain should it occur. And so that also encourages young veterinarians to address a common problem.
To add to that, I have, in my years of experience, I'm sure you agree with this, the pet owner, now pet parent, honestly, is hungry for this knowledge, hungry to learn, really want to recognize and identify pain, whether it be the pain scale from Colorado State or the Grimace scale for their cats. They really want to learn. And I want to share this with the listeners because I do a lot of social media chatting with the pet owners. They want it to come from us. They want it to come from us, the veterinarian. And so I think the future is a lot of education, whether it be through your website or Zoom meetings or whatever it is, to recognize and identify pain. So number one reason why they call the veterinary clinic is because they think that their animal is in some way, shape, form of pain.
I agree. And,
right?
Yeah, until somebody invents a communication device for us to be able to talk to our dog and for them. I mean, I think that's the biggest fear of a pet owner. I'm a pet owner, and the biggest fear is I don't know what they're saying. And I don't know why veterinary medicine has been a little reticent to go directly to the pet owner and educate them. And I think that's the future. That is the future.
Right. I think also that in academia, for example, that there will be continued cooperation with faculty members and the industry to understand and develop even more medications to manage suffering and pain so that there can be quality of life even in the older patients. Or in a horse, for example, that has been retired from racing because of too many injuries, et cetera. So the research aspect of it, I think, is really active and progressive.
Yes. If we could, I'll put you a homework assignment on your job there, Dr. Short. If you can create a collar for dogs and cats to really communicate with us, they'd be like, they're so close. You all know. They're like, really want to chat with us. So you could be like, I'm hurting here, Mom. It's my right hind leg, Dad. You know?
Well, and there's so much technology. I mean, that's a whole, like, it's exciting because the activity trackers and being able to, because you realize that just a dog getting up and down and moving so many hours in the day doesn't really correlate with pain, does it? You know, but you know, maybe they're more painful because they can't get comfortable, but they're gonna get it. The thermal imaging, the pain trace, the biosignaling, the pain trace, all of those things to help us get into their heads a little bit better. I mean, that we have trouble getting into people's heads. Think of all the people you know that are like, oh, I'm not really in pain. I'm just, you know.
In the future, I predict that electronically we'll be able to determine whenever they need different care, medications, et cetera. That's coming.
I can't wait for that. I can't wait. You know, and Dr. Johnson, the things that you're just talking about, like the pain trace and Digitherm, I always want to add, as a general practitioner myself, these are such great service items that really add value to a physical exam, you know, and it really shows and it gets their buy-in from the client where you can see, let's identify there is oral pain. You know, let me show you on the spikes of like that, whether it be a pain trace or the Digitherm looking where, you know, you're scanning them for redness, heat, and swelling. I just think it's wonderful. And this is just the beginning of greatness to come, I think, with technology.
Well, and I think it's happening in the human side. I mean, look at the things that they do in the dentist chair now that they never used to do. I mean, they get that intraoral camera out. And I mean, they've been taking bite wing radiographs for years, but the idea that they're really taking the deepest look that they possibly can, because we don't want to miss anything. Right. You know, we don't want to lose our teeth. And the same with our patients in veterinary medicine. We want to try to not miss anything.
Right. Well, we've had the options of various aspects of monitoring the cardiopulmonary system with the development over the years of, you know, the ECG, the fact that we could measure how much airflow is going and what's the oxygen level, et cetera. And we commonly think in terms that, monitoring cardiopulmonary function, oh, that's just routine. We can do it on any patient. But how do we determine whether or not, even with multimodal approaches, are we really managing the pain in this animal, or is it just acting better than it did before? Is it truly not suffering anymore?
Right.
Really well said. Dr. Johnson, where can our listeners learn more about the International Veterinary Academy of Pain Management, IVPM?
Please go to the website, www.ivapm.org, and learn about the Pain Awareness Month, the IVAPM, the history of the IVAPM, the co-founder right there with us.
Thank you.
And also the CVPP process. Thank you so much for highlighting the IVAPM. I think I always say, why wouldn't every veterinary professional want to be a member of a pain society? Like, really?
Yes.
I would add to that one of the beauties of this organization is that it can include people who are in any discipline, whether they are surgeons, internal medicine, anesthesiologists, whatever their special interest might be, they can be included, as well as it's open to any private practitioner, regardless of whether they are small, large, concentrate in a city practice or a country practice. It's open and to anyone who has an interest in managing pain and suffering in animals.
I mean, sign me up is what I say.
Totally. Well, where else can you go for something like that where you're surrounded by colleagues all with a common purpose, obviously.
That's right.
But being able to consult with an esteemed anesthesiologist like Dr. Short as a general practitioner, being able to be in this community has been life-changing for me. I joined when I was about 10 years out of practice and never looked back.
Well, thank you for what you do.
And we have multiple sources of educational materials, books and CDs and PowerPoint presentations and so forth. So for those who do not feel that they have the knowledge to treat pain, recognize pain as some of their colleagues, there are the programs that are given each year. There's the educational materials available. So it is available to get educated in how to recognize pain and treat it.
Excellent. So many great resources available there. Charles Short, Dr. Jennifer Johnson, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fantastic.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And on behalf of the veterinary profession, thank you to you both for what you've done and, you know, paved the way for so much in this profession. So thank you to you both.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. As always, stay safe out there. Thank you for what you do. Continue to be awesome. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.